This is David Duke. And this is David Duke, and this is the David Duke Internet Web Radio Broadcast, broadcast to the world with news and information of vital importance to Europeans and people of European descent, wherever they may live upon the earth, and certainly it's important to all people. I believe that every race, every heritage, every nation, every nationality, every religion, all people on this planet have a right to preserve their way of life, control their own affairs, and not be under the heel of any supremacist dominated ideology or people. And I believe it's vital that we understand what's happening in terms of Jewish supremacism. They literally control most of the world's media. They control Hollywood, much of the New York, Hollywood, London, Paris axis of media. They control the way we look at the world. They control so many aspects of what we call international politics. Look at the terribly horrible conditions that are occurring right now in Lebanon, and the one-sided reporting of this phenomenon. It's important to understand the mechanisms of Jewish supremacism. That's what my book, Jewish Supremacism, does. And over the next few days, we're going to continue to do the spoken word version of my book, Jewish Supremacism. We are now on the third and final part of Chapter 4. Chapter 4 is entitled Jews, Communism, and Civil Rights, a very vital chapter that deals with Jewish feminism and their role in the radical feminist movement around the world, and how they use egalitarianism and so-called civil rights as a weapon to achieve their own supremacy. Sounds a bit ironic, but that's exactly what occurs. So I hope that you enjoy and you find very valuable this next section of Jewish supremacism, which is Chapter 4, the third part, and that's entitled Jews, Communism, and Civil Rights. Simultaneous with the sacrifice of our nation upon the altar of an impossible racial egalitarianism came the promotion for the equally fictitious idea of sexual equality. Women were told that they were psychologically the same as men, but were just socially conditioned by the environment to be wives and mothers instead of research scientists and captains of industry. Not only did the women's liberation movement try to convince women that nurturing and enculturating the next generation was less important than sweating on an assembly line or sweating the bottom line in executive suites, they went much further by decrying the role of wife and mother altogether. Freud also contributed to the destruction of the family in his endorsement of the supposed liberation of sexual promiscuity. One of the strengths of the West has always been high investment parenting as compared to the Third World. Freud and his Jewish purveyors of psychoanalysis conflated sex and love and justified the destruction of the family unit because of issues such as unsatisfactory sexual gratification. Women's liberation has completely restructured the American family, as most wives and mothers have been forced into job markets by the new economic standards, thus limiting the options of those who might otherwise choose a homemaking role. Many researchers say that the creation of millions of working mothers has had a deleterious effect on family stability and child development. As a result, many women are now struggling as the sole provider for themselves and their children, and the ones in stable two-parent families often find themselves stressed and debilitated by having to do both the traditional woman's roles in the home and working 8 hours a day outside of it. The most prominent of the modern feminists were Gloria Steinem, Betty Friedan, and Bella Abzug. Interestingly, all three came from one of the most sexually repressive religions on earth, Judaism. A Hole in the Sheet by Evelyn Kay, who grew up in an Orthodox home, illustrates the demeaning and often degraded positions of women in the Jewish faith and the hatred expressed toward Gentiles outside of it. She discusses the bar mitzvah and the completely ascendant role of the male and writes the following. Quote, during the prayers which a Jewish man recites every morning are a series of blessings, which include, thank you, Lord, for not making me a non-Jew, for not making me a slave, for not making me a woman. In Susan Weidman Schneider's book, Jewish and Female, Rabbi Laura Geller comments, minstrel taboos are responsible for real damage to Jewish women's views of themselves and their bodies. I have met many women who learned nothing about the Torah except that they could not touch the Torah because they menstruate. Their sense of themselves as inferior Jews has already permeated their relationship through tradition and their own bodies. Unquote. Kay also bravely comments on the anti-Gentile nature of Jewish Orthodoxy. Quote, the final turning point for me was anti-Goyism. The mark of a truly devout Hasidic or Orthodox Jew, as well as many other Jews, is an unquestioned hatred of non-Jews. This is the foundation of the ultra-Orthodox and Hasidic philosophy. It's as tenacious, unreasoned, and impossible as anti-Semitism, racism, and sexism. And as intractable. What it says is that all non-Jews, or goyim, as the word is in Yiddish, since it's the plural of goy, are wicked, evil, and untrustworthy. There is a complete litany of all the terrible things about non-Jews which apply to every single one and which are believed implicitly by the Orthodox. These include, all goyim drink alcohol and are always drunk. All goyim are on drugs. All goyim hate Jews even when they seem to be friendly. All goyim are anti-Semites no matter what they say or do. All goyim have a terrible family life and mistreat their wives and children. All goyim eat pork all the time. Goyim are never as clever, as kind, or as wise or honest as Jews. You can never trust the goyim. There's much more, but the essence of anti-goyism is passed to Jewish children with their mother's milk and then nurtured, fed, and watered carefully into full-blown phobias throughout their lives. Unquote. The Talmud often characterizes women as unclean, whores, and deceitful lower beings. It even has long passages that justify adult males having sexual relations with little girls. Women are segregated in the Orthodox synagogue. Women are almost as reviled as Gentiles. Note the following Talmudic references, starting with the prayer to which Kay refers. Blessed be thou, who has not made me a goy, who has not made me a woman, and who has made me an Israelite, who has not made me a slave. That's from Judah ben Eliyah. When a grown-up man has intercourse with a little girl, it's nothing, for when the girl is less than this, 3 years old, it is as if one puts the finger into the eye. Tears come to the eye again and again, but eyesight returns, and so does virginity come back to the little girl under 3 years old. That's from Ketubot 11b. A maiden aged 3 years and a day may be acquired in marriage by coition. Sanhedrin 55b and 69a and 69b and Yabamoth 57b, 58a and 60b. Yet the Jewish high priestesses of women's liberation have made few inroads in reforming those inequities. Only the reform part of Judaism puts women on somewhat an equal footing, but Israel is an Orthodox-run Jewish nation, and nearly all the reform and conservative organizations around the world support Israel wholeheartedly. The question of ethnic heritage far overshadows any doctrinal debate. It is ironic that women from the religious culture having the most demeaning attitude toward women should focus their efforts on promoting sexual revolution among those of European descent. It seems to me that their time could be better spent addressing the rank inequities in their own backyard. Section, Equalitarianism and Civil Rights as Weapons. As I uncovered more information on the Jewish domination of the anti-white and anti-family revolution, it struck me that many powerful Jews might see white America in the same manner in which they once viewed the Tsar and the white Russians. I began to wonder whether we were destined to become, as a people deposed, a people conquered, not with armies and cannon, but by the power of the person and the power of the press. If they do not view us, as Theodore Herzl did, as aliens, why do so many of them attack American traditions and customs, from the structure of the family to the singing of Christmas carols in our schools? Although not all Jews participate in the crusade against our heritage, a vast majority support chauvinist Jewish organizations and back the candidates for public office who most sublimate themselves to Jewish concerns. Jewish support means far more than their voting bloc. It means full campaign coffers and a powerfully influential media. And it means almost sure victory if they oppose the other candidate for some other reason. Jewish activists have been ruthless in their support for pluralism of American politics and culture. Their high-sounding Jewish promises of the so-called civil rights movement, love and peace and brotherhood, have been replaced with the violent obscenities of a rap song. For African Americans, once rhythmic and peaceful urban communities now echo with the sound of gunfire. A third of all young African American men are in jail, on probation, or parole, and millions are chained hand, foot, and soul to alcohol and drugs. What did Jews have to gain from the empowerment of minorities in America? Obviously, the Marxists saw minorities as staunch allies vital for the advancement of their agenda and political success over the more resistant European American. Over the past decades, the black bloc vote has been vital to liberal politics. Perhaps more importantly, a Babylon-like multiracial America suits Jewish interests, as it does anywhere else in the world. In a divided land, the most unified group exercises the greatest power. Divide and conquer has always been the supremacist prescription for power. In a jumbled, kaleidoscopic society, the exercise of alien power is less apparent to majority elements. For if a tiny minority has an agenda hostile to the majority, that minority needs to be unobtrusive as possible. Multiracialism muddies the waters. Jews will always thrive in such a Babylon. Every blow that has broken the solidarity and furthered this dispossession of the founding and once ruling American majority is an opening for the new contenders to the throne. Of course, this process goes on not only in America, but in every nation where Jews constitute a powerful minority. They consistently seek to weaken the predominant group, no matter what it might be, as to afford an opportunity for increasing their own power. A great deal of the degeneracy has no design behind it at all. The alien nature described by Theodore Herzl finds its expression in thousands of jabs and body blows to the traditions and values of the Anglo-created America. Whether it is a nativity scene outlawed from a public square, or an all-male military academy turned co-ed, or morning radio programs filled with crude talk of human excretory activity, or the glamorization of drugs in films and novels, the beat goes on, drummed by a people proud of their alien nature. The tune is the funeral march for America and the entire Western world. They eat away at our nation's European roots, always gaining influence and power, and yet always considering themselves outsiders. And that is precisely what they are: spiritual, cultural, and genetic outsiders who are now on the inside of the American power structure. Consider the following statement from a Jewish pundit who has both success and fame. Decades later, prowling along the river with Texas Rangers to see them catch crossing Mexicans, I stopped and sat on the ground. I said, "That's enough. I'm one of them, the wetbacks, and not one of them, the hunters." A.M. Rosenthal wrote those words, a man who has been head of the editorial pages of the New York Times, America's most powerful newspaper. With all his money, power, and prestige, sitting in the dirt along the muddy banks of the Rio Grande, Rosenthal still identifies himself as an outsider. His loyalties are not with other Americans who want to preserve the American way of life. His allegiance is with the aliens who seek to change it. The minority racism, the civil rights, and the egalitarianism that has flourished in America had its origins in an alien ethnocentrism. Our nation, once distinctively European in nature, is fading fast. It was not brewed in the fleshpots of Babylon. Yet, without determined and courageous efforts for self-preservation, it will die there. Most Americans who fought against the civil rights movement, believing that it would lead to the destruction of the fabric of society, never recognized the source of its power. In the South, some blamed the Yankees, some the politicians, and some the media. Few people understood that those behind the civil rights movement were of the same malevolent power that propelled the Russian Revolution, that influenced the participation of America in the First World War, that helped bring about the Second World War, and that finally created the supremacist state of Israel. How ironic it is that the civil rights movement had its roots in racism, and that it was simply a weapon wielded by the most ethnocentric people on earth against their ancient enemies. African Americans were simply pawns in a much larger political game, and in real terms, have suffered in their own ways, as European Americans have suffered in others. Most of the non-Jewish whites who were enlisted in the cause never realized that the struggle was not really about civil rights at all. Those participants, like the African Americans themselves, as well as so many whites, were being manipulated in the much bigger contest of the Jewish struggle for power. The same Jewish-dominated establishment that preaches the holy writ of racial equality and racial dissolution never lets Americans forget the right of Jews. In fact, the holy obligation of Jews to maintain their heritage both here and in their Jewish state. It reminds us constantly from the pulpit of television of their unmatched godliness, the eternal innocence and victimhood. Their pundits and scriptwriters unabashedly proclaim Jewish mental, cultural, and moral supremacy. They are canonized daily by their media, while those who dare to utter a contrary word are muzzled and demonized. A tabernacle for the new religion of the Holocaust stands squarely in the midst of the American Acropolis of Washington, D.C. In that shrine, the American people can worship the chosen people and feel proper guilt for their sins against them. There they can learn of the worst transgression of all, questioning the only true civil right, the Jewish right, to rule us culturally, spiritually, and politically. They never cease to tell us that the greatest crime in the history of the world was Hitler's supposed effort to commit genocide against them, to wipe out the Jewish people as a race. Yet each day the Jewish supremacists promote massive immigration into European nations and encourage racial intermarriage. Those processes will, of course, constitute a true genocide against their own ancient enemies. It will destroy the unique character and heritage of the European race. Alien oppression of our people would be bad enough by itself, but our masters clearly planned the genetic extermination of our kind and any other people that might stand in their way. Once I understood that, I could no longer remain silent about Jewish world supremacy. Their continued dominance would sweep away our folk in a rising tide of immigration, intermarriage, and European self-sterilization. It is only their twisted media power that denotes our desire for our people to survive as called racism. Even though I fear for my European American people, I believe that every race, every ethnic group, every people should have the right to continue its unique heritage and culture. My position for European Americans is not hypocritical or inconsistent, for I wish the same natural right for every people. Jewish orchestrated globalism and hegemony present an elementary threat to the survival of all unique peoples and the traditional cultures. The alien-dominated media keep most Americans completely unaware of the ongoing dispossession of our people and the alien segment that cheers it on. I began to see that the media was the most powerful weapon they used against us, so I focused my next inquiries on Jewish infiltration and domination of the American and the world mass communication media. Well, ladies and gentlemen, that's the end of part three of the fourth chapter of Jewish Supremacism, entitled Jews, Communism, and Civil Rights. Tomorrow, the next chapter, which is a very vital chapter, a chapter that has such an incredible impact on our everyday life here in the United States of America and around the world, and it's called Jewish Media Supremacy, Chapter 5. So tune in tomorrow for the first part of Jewish Media Supremacy. I believe that chapter will simply blow you away. Thanks for tuning in, and please use your time and effort to spread this broadcast and this audio book all over the world. And ladies and gentlemen, we need your support at davidduke.com. And if you can go to our website, davidduke.com, and make a contribution, it will certainly enable us to continue our work, not only across the United States of America, but all over the world in educating the people as to what's truly going on these vital issues. Jewish supremacism is, indeed, the world's greatest problem.
This has been a David Duke Worldwide Web Radio broadcast. For more information and to support our vital work, please visit www.daviddukes.com.